We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, April 22nd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, lifting off on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Hope you all had a great Easter. We're right back in to the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. Have to launch right into LSU baseball conversation. And isn't it amazing? Just don't take stock of a college baseball team. 3 games into an SEC season, 15 games into an SEC slate. It's going to change, at least with LSU baseball. It almost seemingly does. This time Friday, we had our first pitch from Rufino's on the river, and nobody was in good spirits after a shellacking Thursday night, game one against the Florida Gators. How about 2 in a row? A performance for the ages, and that is saying something, with the quality of LSU starting pitching over the last, say, 5 to 10 years, the Palminteri era. Tremendous performance from Cole Henry, and then the bats absolutely come to life and storm to life without Chris Reed, Zach Watson, Gavin Duggar, and more on those guys in a moment because they were awfully active today, and that's a great sign for the immediate future. But let's dive into exactly what LSU baseball did, and we'll take your phone call, 706-0111. First off, I'm going to start with Cole Henry. His 12 strikeouts Friday, the most by an LSU pitcher since March of 2015. It's been a moment, and they've had guys come through the turnstiles and turn pro since then. Drafted very highly, in fact, for his efforts. Henry, your co-SEC freshman of the week. And I love this from James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. The smartest Moran in the village for a reason. He crunched the numbers through Cole Henry and his first 6 SEC starts. Through those starts, Henry, 37 innings pitched, so he's given you an average of more than 6 every time out. He's helping to float you in terms of the distance in games. 3.41 ERA. Hey, that's pretty darn good. Almost 12 strikeouts per 9 innings pitched. That's more than just pretty good. That is, I mean, otherworldly. That's out of the stratosphere. Literally almost 12 strikeouts per 9. So Cole Henry has made his case as the ace. I'm not telling you he needs to move to Friday or game one status. He could. I'm sure it would work out. But I think Palminteri is going to leave Zach Hess when healthy in that slot. And he did get some burn Hess on Saturday, so we'll see if he's good to go coming back from the groin injury. He got the equivalent of what would be bullpen work in mop-up duty against the Gators. And LSU, as a team, mopped up against Florida games 2 and 3. All told, over the 3 game set, 33 runs. And so LSU baseball getting it done with a stud freshman on the mound. And then at the plate, explode for 13 runs on Friday, 11 on Saturday. And that's the way you wrap it up before you head into the Easter weekend. Going to let you hear from Palminteri momentarily, but I know that you want an update. You want to know what happened today with LSU baseball. Well, they didn't play, but we do have some injury updates. Let me share those now. Tigers getting ready for Lamar tomorrow at 6:30 from the box. Then they're at Bama Friday through Sunday. Prior to practice, or at least the portion that the media was welcome into, Chris Reed, Zach Watson, and infielder Gavin Duggar were all spotted hitting in a simulated game. That's great news. Palminteri expounded on that, said he doesn't expect any of the 3 to play tomorrow against Lamar, but he thinks all 3 could play at Bama. And so Josh Smith suddenly rounding into one of the best hitters in the SEC. You know he had that type of pedigree. You know what you get from Antoine Duplantis. Cade Beloso is tearing the cover off the ball lately. And you're likely to get Chris Reed and Zach Watson injected back into your lineup. You get another quality infield bat in Gavin Dugas at your disposal. And suddenly this team is heading in the right direction. So what I want to be cautious about today is this. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. Just don't forget that this team's got the capability to make one heck of a run. And they remind you on that Friday and Saturday. So the depths of despair after LSU is taking it on the chin. I think at one point down 13-0 on Thursday. And they crush Florida Friday and Saturday. But you don't get too high off this. You're just reminded of exactly what it is that this team can accomplish when healthy. And they're starting to get that way. But maybe the brightest shining light of them all is Cole Henry. Stupendous. And he's got a chance to give you a guy that feels like nearly an automatic win on Saturday. And so if Hess can come around, well, Katie, bar the door. And here we are, two consecutive years where it feels like a freshman shall lead them. Last year, for most of the SEC season, Mikhail Hilliard was the best thing LSU had going. I think once he started to see teams a second time around in the SEC tournament, once he started to deal with some arm issues, throwing that Uncle Charlie as many times a game as he does, it changed a little bit there for Mikhail Hilliard. I think what we're seeing from Henry, the freshman out of Alabama, boy, it feels a lot more sustainable to me. All right, I told you you would hear from Paul Maneri. Forget about what I have to say on Cole Henry. Here's what his head coach had to say.
Well, I don't think you can ignore his stuff, Cody. I think that's a big reason why he is successful. You know, obviously he's got a strong arm, but he's a three-pitch pitcher. I mean, he can throw any of his three pitches at any time for strikes. And the reason that he can do that is because his mechanics are so repeatable. You know, he's not a, you know, all-over-the-place guy. He's just very, very under control. And because of that, he's got great command. I don't think he walked the batter tonight, did he? Went 12 strikeouts. And that's unbelievable. But once you go past that, all of that, he's got that temperament. You never know when he's in trouble. You never know when he's pitching great. He's a lot like Aaron Nola that way. With Nola, you just never knew. He never got flustered, and he made some big pitches when he needed to.
I'm going to go on a limb and say that's Cody Worsham interviewing Paul Maneri while somebody's cutting the grass. So not bad there at all. CD, that's almost worse than the buzz from the football indoor facility.
Well, for what it's worth, I know that's probably after the game when you got everybody kind of getting everything taken down afterwards and cleaning up. Because I know we definitely have a similar issue where we're getting Cajun's post-game sound. It's usually you're cooling the gang in the background. So yeah.
You know, I just painted a hell of a word picture, and you killed it with inside baseball talk. And by the way, cooling the gang never ruined anything. So just get that off your mind immediately.
Yeah, okay.
Understood. We're gonna try this again. For the guy cutting the grass, maybe just throttle it down a little bit for this one, because I did want to get to Paul Maneri and everything he's been through this year, especially the loss of his father. You have to think that Friday and Saturday were uplifting, right? Coming into an Easter weekend, you have to feel like that gave heart to a guy who probably at this juncture could use some. Not that he needs the confidence. He knows his guys could play, but here he tells you that he's proud of the guys.
Just real proud of the guys, you know, because you talk to them all the time about how each game is a separate entity. But, you know, they're humans too. And when they have a tough loss, man, it wears on you. It wears on me as a coach. Sometimes I have to, you know, put on a little bit of an act to try to stay positive with the guys. But, you know, the next day, if you have any chance to win, it's got to be because, you know, the players are enthusiastic. They're thinking confidently. They're going to go out there and play hard and believe that they can get it done. And otherwise, you have no chance. So, you know, we won the series. You know, I know I don't talk about series, but everybody likes to talk about series. Okay. We did it the hard way. We lost the first day by with a really bad game, and then we won it the next 2 days. And I thought we played exceptionally great in all phases of the game, both days.
All right, mercifully, the lawn guy was catching a smoke for that interview. So the sound quality, phenomenal. And I'll back up what CPM, Coach Paul Maneri, said there. I detected it when I interviewed him last week, leading into the Pontiff Junior Classic, right? I asked him about what went wrong, losing 2 out of 3 at Missouri. He said, and I quote, "Let's start with what went right. Put on the happy face, be positive, be the leader, and sometimes the talent will follow." I know this isn't the Florida team of last year or the year prior that won a national championship, but that's a nice comeback the last two efforts from LSU. We got more LSU baseball talk coming at you later in the program. And boy, we've got some great guests lined up today. We'll try to match last Monday. We had Tim Brando aboard. Today, in our next segment, going to New Orleans, Ken Trahan, Crescent City Sports. Who the heck are the Saints going to draft, and are they trading up? Ken Trahan, our only scheduled guest of hour number one. Andrew Lopez to lead off hour number two. Straight up 5 o'clock, we're talking Pels and all things NBA playoffs. At 5:45, we're going to Minute Maid Park. Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, getting us ready for Stros versus Twins. They play three times this week in H-Town, four times next week in the Great White North. So Brian McTaggart at 5:45 and James Buers at straight up 6 o'clock. Prep softball, they're going to the semis this weekend. Prep baseball, they start their playoffs, some of the brackets, tonight. You got to hear from James Buers, the Acadian Advocate, and you will at 6 o'clock. We're just getting started. Ben and Clint taking you all the way until 6:35 today. And that'll be Astro launch before the Stros play the Twins. First pitch at 7:10. Right back in, talking Saints with Ken Trahan. We're moving fast today. Keep up. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
The Game Hotline. 706-0111. 706-0111. Time for a 103.7 The Game traffic and weather update.
Couple things to report right now, and that includes an accident at 5627 Johnson Street right by Pep Boys, and also an accident at 810 South College Road, not far from Merrill Lynch Waste Management, and also an accident at 3814 Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, not far from the Chick-fil-A. So be aware of all that as you're making your way back home on this Monday afternoon. Currently, definitely a pretty decent day out there. Not really too many clouds in the skies. And I think that's a really good thing. We're going to keep it rolling on in just a little bit with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
For 50 years, Acadiana has turned to J.P. Thibodeau Automotive for remarkable prices, customer-focused service, and a relaxed, pressure-free buying experience. J.P. Thibodeau Nissan continues to celebrate 50 years of service with great anniversary savings, like a new 2019 Nissan Altima, zero down and $335 a month, or a 2019 Nissan Rogue, $297 down and $297 a month. We've got a huge selection of new Nissans and giant savings during the 50th anniversary sale going on now at J.P. Thibodeau Nissan. Come experience the J.P. Thibodeau difference in quality, service, and price. J.P. Thibodeau Nissan, Highway 90, exit 126, New Iberia, or jpthibodeaunissan.com.
J.P. Thibodeau Automotive Import Store.
Ultima stock number 95062, MSRP 25060, JBT discount 1560, rebate $2,000. Rogue stock number 95271, MSRP 26415, JBT discount 1099, rebate 2025, money factor 0.00003, residual 50% with approved credit through NEMAC plus DTNL.
In your neighborhood, there are gas lines and utility lines buried just beneath the surface. And if you or your contractor digs a hole and hits one, bad things can happen. Before you dig, always call 811 so your site can be marked and accidents avoided. It's a free public service from Louisiana One Call, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call, 811. Before you dig, know what's below.
Where we shop, where we eat and have fun, all of it makes our community home. Let's celebrate. Shop local. Shop certified South Louisiana.
For over 25 years, Acadiana has trusted Dr. Patrick McGee Eye Health Care and Quality Eyewear. We accept all insurances, including Medicaid, for both children and adults. Call 234-EYES or 984-2020.
And as Dr. Clearsight would say, y'all come see.
At Silver's Casino, the silver stays in your hands. Experience exciting gaming action right here in Brobridge. Play the newest video poker games with $1,000 payouts and the best service. Silver's Casino, north of I-10 at exit 109 in Brobridge.
This is Joel Frugier from Acadiana Prescription Shop, inviting you to experience the service and confidence of getting your prescription filled by people who know you and your healthcare needs. Our service is fast and always friendly.
Acadiana Prescription Shop, next to Champagne's in Lafayette's Oil Center.
Shop local. Shop certified South Louisiana.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
right back in. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. We're going to take a trip down to New Orleans right about now. Aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, it's great to catch up with Ken Trahan, owner, CEO, CrescentCitySports.com, and GM of the Saints Hall of Fame Museum. How are you, Ken?
Hey, Ben, doing fine. Thank you.
All right, a busy week. We know that. The NFL draft starts Thursday night. If you could indulge our listeners, what is the process and the collaboration like between Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and everybody else who has a say in this? Sean Payton? I'm not suggesting it's different from the other 31 franchises, but what is it like for the Saints?
Well, there's scouts in the room as well. And, you know, ultimately, this really is about Sean Payton and what he wants to. And that's pretty much been the case for a while now. Jeff Ireland's done a tremendous job with this franchise. He's really amped things up and ramped up their draft process and the quality of the players that they've been able to attain since he's come on board. And I think it's pretty clear his impact has been significant. So it's not really different than any others. I mean, look, there's some other organizations where the owner is an alpha dog and is incredibly involved in it. When Tom Benson was alive, he's in the room, but he was an observer. You know what I mean? And I think Gail Benson is probably more along those lines as well. Whereas when you think about a guy like a Jerry Jones, for instance, he's an alpha dog. You know, he's incredibly involved, and that's probably the case with a few other owners too. So not a lot different than any other, I don't believe.
Okay, if you could go a little deeper for me, because from a distance, I observed the Jeff Ireland difference, but with a little more internal in-house knowledge, how would you describe just what he brings in his area of expertise?
Well, I think his area of expertise is evaluation of players. I mean, I think he understands the process of the draft very well. He's been involved in this for a long time, but certainly he brought a different set of eyes to the table with regard to talent evaluation and final decisions that are made. You know, and organizations always struggle with the concept of the best player available versus a dramatic need. Sometimes a need is dramatic, sometimes it's marginal, and I think when it's dramatic, teams have a tendency to reach and go after a guy that maybe was rated a little bit lower than you had him. So I don't think that they've really done that here. What we've seen from this organization, by and large, before Ireland got here and since he's gotten here, is that their tendency is to trade up in the draft. They've never traded down. They've always traded up and targeted players, whether it was Ingram or Cooks or Davenport or Kamara. You know, we've seen this happen on a regular basis, and I just mentioned some pretty good names. So it's worked out for them well. By and large, the thought process amongst many observers is trade down and get as many picks and value as you can, but you can't argue with the success that they've had with the guys they've targeted.
Talking Saints draft right now with Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com. And that leads me to the obvious question. How likely is it that Ireland, Loomis, Payton & Company trade up into the first round or maybe even use their accumulation of later round picks and just get something else in the second, possibly a third rounder?
Yeah, I think both are possible. Obviously, as I suggested, history has told us that they're not only willing to do this, but very willing to do so. And given the window that exists, it wouldn't shock you at all. They did it last year, and there's no reason to believe they wouldn't consider doing it this year. The problem is, what are the assets that you have to deal with? And you might have to reach into the future draft again, much like they have done the last 2 years, to accomplish that. Of course, that said, with Drew Brees on a one-year contract, that's certainly very plausible. And I think they feel like they have good young players that set them up pretty well for the future period. But I think everybody recognizes that they've got a Hall of Fame quarterback and that his window is short. And that's why they would be willing to do this if, in fact, they do. And all you have to do is look at the last 2 years and how close they've been with the miracle in Minnesota and then the no-call last year. I mean, these were both teams that had a chance genuinely to get to the Super Bowl. And I certainly would make the argument that they were the best team in the NFL last year. They just didn't get a chance to prove it.
Ken, your personal opinion, how far is pushing the envelope too far in terms of continuing to trade up and mortgaging the future? And look, part of my thought process in asking you that, if they're as good as we think they're going to be this year, their first rounder next year may be between 30 and 32.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of it too. If they finish, again, high up, they're going to have a late first-round pick. And as Mickey Loomis pointed out today, he doesn't see a whole lot of difference from the end of the first round to 62 where they are right now. There's quality players, and I guess it really does depend on a given year. Some years the draft is deeper than others, and maybe this is a good one this year, evaluating the entire process of the quality of the players involved. So I think that it really does, right now, I think the answer to the question is that it's immediate, that they'd probably look at doing this year, but not beyond that, based upon the status of Drew Brees. Everything does revolve around him. I mean, 40 years old, and in the last year of his contract, no guarantee that he would be back. Although if he plays at a high level this year, you cannot imagine that they wouldn't try to bring him back. So that said, they understand that while this could be his last year here, that's something that most people don't want to recognize or don't want to even think about. At the same time, they know that to find a quarterback that's going to play at that level is extremely difficult in this league.
Does the pickup, Ken, of Jared Cook out of Oakland mean the Saints won't look tight end in this draft?
Not necessarily. I think that, they have Josh Hill, and, Romano Anoa'i did not play last year, and he's a blocker anyway. And then Dan Arnold is a project at best and didn't help himself by dropping that ball in the end zone from Brees, in the playoff game against the Rams either. So, no, I mean, you've got Jared Cook and you've got Josh Hill. Now, those two guys obviously are competent to good players, so you could probably fill the third slot definitively. At the same time, it is a deep draft for tight ends, so I would not rule it out. That's one of the positions that Mickey Loomis cited today, that the draft is deep in. So I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I don't think it's their primary interest.
Another moment or two with Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com. All right, offensive line. I think we recognize they've experienced some attrition there, right? And with Max Unger departing, How do they continue to fill that void? I know they went and got somebody in free agency, but I would imagine that they looked there in the draft as well.
Well, I think defensive line first, offensive line second. Defensive line is the most pressing need as you look at what they have or don't have. They don't have their fine player Sheldon Rankins injured. They won't likely have David Onyemata to start the year, probably facing a suspension based upon offseason activity. So that's two down, and then Tyler Davison signed with the Falcons. So that's three defensive tackles that you're down. You sign Malcolm Brown, that's one guy. And then otherwise you sign Mario Edwards, a defensive end, basically to replace Alex Okafor. So you do the math, and they're absolutely down defensive linemen from where they were last year. And then offensive line, they did sign Nick Easton to play center to replace Unger. But beyond that, they don't bring Bushrod back, it appears. So they clearly need depth up front, and Andrew Speetz in the last year of his contract. So I would definitely think offensive line would be next. They do have Cameron Tom from Baton Rouge and Will Clapp from New Orleans as part of the mix as young players. But again, you can't say right now that they're completely sold on either one, although you'd like to think that both have a future. So yeah, I'd say defensive line, offensive line would be one and two, and then beyond that, maybe wide receiver.
We'll wrap up, Ken, crossing franchise lines that Gail Benson has right now. On the Saints side, we've been discussing the difference of Jeff Ireland. I understand that he's advising Loomis, but on the basketball side, they've made a hire of David Griffin, and he'll be, like I said, in a different capacity than what Ireland does on the football side. But should fans expect a similar impact in terms of evaluation and getting it done?
Well, I think, first of all, Griffin will have autonomy. He's running he's basically running the show in all facets. Loomis has taken himself out of it. So the Saints aspect of it will not apply anymore. They've taken themselves out of it completely, and it's going to be Griffin running the organization. Now, he'll have somebody, a couple of people working under him, obviously, but this is his game. He's taking over. He's got the chance to shape this in his own image. So that was a huge hire to get a guy that has some experience and some skins on the wall, and one of his first moves was to keep Alvin Gentry, which, of course, wasn't real popular with some fans, but at the same time, Gentry's not a bad coach. He's not one of the best, but he's not a bad coach. He proved that a year ago when they went to the playoffs and won a round against Portland. He's pretty good. And this year, he handled the situation with Anthony Davis about as well as anybody could have possibly handled it. So I'm intrigued to see what they can do. I will say this. Gentry will probably be on a little bit of a short leash because, again, there's accountability here. And I think at least it's good that he'll be given a chance. But Griffin will be the guy to make his mark on this thing. And the Anthony Davis situation has to be cleared up pretty quickly. And in my mind, they got to get him out of here. I think he's a bridge too far to deal with at this stage. And he's kind of painted himself into that corner, and I don't think he wants to be here anyway. So it's up to Griffin to get the best deal possible and then try to get lucky in the lottery there. They are seventh right now in terms of the overall pick. But as you know, with the NBA system, that seven could turn into a five, a four, or even a nine. So stay tuned.
I do want to ask you about the Sports Hall of Fame Museum. They're not going to play a game, obviously, for another 4.5 months there. But when's the next opportunity that fans may be able to come and check it out?
Well, the Saints Hall of Fame Museum is open every day. We do it by appointment Monday through Friday because we're in the Superdome and we have to make sure that no events are going on in the Dome. But we're typically there every morning with people being in there, including today. It's located at Gabe B as in Boy on the Plaza level of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And again, if you go to StHallOfFame.com, that's StHallOfFame.com. Everything's there explaining what to do and how to do it. But it's $10 for adults and $5 for seniors and for children 12 and under. And again, that's StHallOfFame.com. You can call 504-471-2192. And we have people in there all the time and really enjoy having them there, too, and look forward to it. And then, of course, we'll make our announcement about our Hall of Fame, Saints Hall of Fame class of 2019. The announcement will be coming up on June the 6th. So we'll look forward to that, too.
Ken, really a treat every time we get to talk. Thanks for doing this today.
Sure thing, Ben. Thank you.
That's Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com. And he just gave you all the particulars. Feels like he's rattled that off a few times before, too, huh? That was awesome for the Saints Hall of Fame Museum. We're coming right back in. Your sink or swim question of the day coming at you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Iron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
You know, I can't answer that. You know, it's you never know what happens on draft day. That's what makes it made for TV. And I'll keep that opinion to myself. Very well could. You know, if he does or doesn't, it affects what happens behind the number one pick. So we just have to be prepared for all the scenarios.
That is Tampa Bay Bucks executive Jason Licht. And he's talking about Kyler Murray. The question, will the Heisman Trophy winner from Boomer Sooner be available at number 5 when Tampa picks? I don't think he will, but that's not the question I've got in mind as we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. I want to dive right into it because we have so many dual threat quarterbacks that come out of the college ranks. And I think we're at a point where not only can they succeed, but many of them are. So some of the tired old narratives are thankfully dying and going by the wayside. But it's not always about what type of player you are. Sometimes it's about how good you are, your size, your skill set, right? All of these things. And while we all recognize that Kyler Murray's a freak, right? I mean, a dual sport athlete at the collegiate level, top 10 pick in the Major League Baseball draft by the Oakland A's a few years ago. He's going to be a top 5 pick Thursday night in the NFL draft. So the guy's incredible. He ain't Bo Jackson. Let's not all get crazy here and make that leap. But he's an incredible athlete. But I'm curious, and what I'm about to ask you, is just how good of a football player do you think he'll be at the next level?
Exciting and new.
Thursday night, we get round one of the NFL draft. Yeah, Kyler Murray is going to go really, really quickly. Maybe not one to Arizona. Could be that somebody trades up, as has been reported. A lot of interest in the Cardinals giving away that number one pick so someone else can get Kyler Murray. But nonetheless, he'll go very, very soon. Here's my question to you. Sink or swim, will Kyler Murray be a bust in the NFL? Let's keep it real simple today. And let's start to really dive in when it comes to the NFL draft. CD, is he a bust or is he going to be a player?
I think he's going to wind up being a bust, Ben, because it just feels like to me, no matter where he winds up going, it feels like there's going to be a large period of adjustment for him to kind of be able to at least succeed at a high level in the NFL. Because if he goes to the Arizona Cardinals, like he could very well go. Of course, like I said, it's if they don't trade it. he's going to be playing with a aging Larry Fitzgerald, who's probably not going to be too much longer for the league. And then who else does he have as a target to kind of play with? And even if he winds up, like we're talking about with Tampa Bay Buccaneers potentially, if he winds up dropping down to top five, which would seem really weird considering the fact that he wound up kind of passing the combine by an eighth of an inch, if you will, I just think that he winds up being a bust in the NFL largely because of the fact there's, I feel like it's just the talent around him isn't great.
You're forgetting one thing when it comes to Arizona. I'm not saying this will make him successful. The right system helps a lot of people, and the right synergy between a coach and quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury recruited Kyler Murray to play at Texas Tech. He didn't win out on those sweepstakes. The young man went to A&M, ended up at Oklahoma. We know the story. But I think that the connection between Kingsbury and Murray could be lightning in a bottle. Not telling you that they would set the league on fire, that he would reinvent the sport, just telling you that he could be awfully good. I'm going to disagree with you here. I'm going to sink on the idea of him being a bust, but that doesn't mean that I'm buying in wholesale on the kid being the next version of what's going on basically in Kansas City. I'm not telling you that you're going to see everything that Pat Mahomes has done, right? Sit for a year, come in, win the league MVP your first year as a starter. I don't think he's that level of a talent. And frankly, I'm not sure I compare him too much to Pat Mahomes. The arm strength, some of the creativity, the throwing angles from Mahomes is he's revolutionary. He is setting the league on fire. I don't think Kyler Murray is that type of cat. But if I'm going to compare him to some other guys, right, as I do my litmus test, here's where I'd start. With Tim Tebow, I knew that he was going to be a bust. I knew, sorry, Chet Yoder, that he wasn't going to translate to the NFL. I know that he helped to quarterback a team that was defense first, and what, didn't those Broncos sneak into the playoffs one year? I don't care. I don't care. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. There are a lot of instances where that has happened. Tim Tebow, I knew, was going to be a bust. Johnny Football, I kind of suspected, but it was the demons, I think, that we all knew could contribute to ultimately his demise and him not keeping his footing at the professional level. It wasn't as much like it was with Tebow on translating in terms of his game from one level to the next. So with Tebow, oh, I knew he'd be a bust. With Johnny Football, I suspected for some off-the-field reasons. I'll give you another comp. RG3. Not to be confused with Raymond Parsons III. I was a bit surprised at the way that his career panned out. And he started off like gangbusters. He actually led the Washington Redskins to the playoffs when they weren't all that good overall. It was the injuries that did in RG3. I thought he had a chance to be a superstar at the next level. His first year seemed to kind of validate my feelings, and then it fell off a cliff a little bit. But look, we've got more recent examples, don't we? We could discuss Pat Mahomes, who came in, sat a year, as good as we've seen as a first-year starter. Jared Goff, maybe some slightly mixed results, but you'd be hard-pressed to call him a bust. His team got all the way to the Super Bowl, and, hey, he wasn't the driving catalyst. Pretty good defense there, you could say. But he did do some pretty impressive things throughout a lot of the regular season. And we could go down the list, right? There are more and more of these guys who are coming in and playing early. Deshaun Watson. I'll tell you this. I don't think Kyler Murray will be the player that Deshaun Watson is capable of being. And so while I don't think he's going to be a bust, and I'm sinking here on the question, I'm not projecting superstardom either. What do you think? A little quiet here on a Monday after Easter. Why don't you break that up? Get in. 706-0111. It's our final descent toward the 2019 NFL Draft. And we will be Saints heavy this week, as you'd like and as you'd expect. But we'll go league-wide as well. I got some other topics in mind this week. Eli Manning, the kid out of Duke. Are they about to pass the torch there? In fact, I'll play some sound for you later in this show where Dave Gettleman, now in charge of making the decisions for the New York Football Giants, he was asked about the Packers model with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Is he getting ready to do that? It would be an interesting choice. Probably wouldn't be a bad one either. I don't know that you kick Eli to the curb immediately because whoever's playing behind that offensive line is going to take a beating, but more on that later. And then there's the LSU angle as well. Who stands the chance to be drafted third? We all presume that Devin White will be a top 5 to 10 pick. He may end up going to the Tampa Bay Bucs. You heard one of their execs earlier in this segment. We all expect Devin White goes early. As far as Greedy Williams, what, back half of the first round? Maybe he falls into the early second round? Maybe. I think that's the range that we expect. Who's going to be third? Right now I'd put my money on Foster Moreau, but a lot of time between now and Thursday. Even more time between now and Friday. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith, breaking up the silence. Will Kyler Murray be a bust?
I'm agree with you, Ben. I don't think he's going to be a bust. I'm not going superstar right off the bat right now. But I think he checks enough boxes more than he doesn't, that he has, you know, the intangibles, the quick release, strong arm, athletic. He's going to get out of some situations. It's interesting to see if he goes to the Cardinals, the type of offense they want to run, because the defenses will adjust pretty quick. So he's going to have to throw anticipation. He's going to have to find openings at that height is what worries me.
You see, I actually don't get as concerned about the height because of his ability to get out of the pocket. And I don't buy into the whole hand size thing. I think those are combine terms. But I'm with you. There may be an adjustment to the NFL, and he may be greeted not so kindly. And look, we've seen that in Baltimore as well. Lamar Jackson's going through some of that. And maybe that's where I'll sandwich the guy in with comps. I think he'll be better than Lamar Jackson, not as good as Deshaun Watson.
Hey, Ben, what if you could kind of elaborate, what are quarterbacks looking at when they're, say, like this guy scrambling on the outside and he's fast defensive ends are closing in on the angles?
You're asking me what he's looking at?
Yeah, what is he looking at as far as when trying to throw anticipation, trying not to throw the big interception at his size, at his height?
Well, I think the number one no-no, and again, not having played that position, but just observing it enough, talking to coaches, the number one no-no is throwing across your body and into the middle of the field. So I think these days the receivers are so skilled at just dragging their feet on the sidelines, and they're all kind of taught to go toward the ball, go toward the sideline. So I think the good ones trust their speed, their agility. Once they get to the outside, their head is down the field. They're not looking back, and they're trying not to throw it over the middle. So those are some of my initial answers, I would think.
Okay. Yeah, I think he can get it done with his arm.
I agree. No, Keith, I agree with that. I appreciate the call. Keith's first up. We got time for more on the other side of this break. The number. When you're ready, 706-0111. Also, when we return, an update on the newest UL basketball player, plus an LSU wide receiver commit from the weekend. Blaine Viator went straight Nostradamus with that call Friday at Ruffino's on the River. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll bounce right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Hawkeyes and news to share as we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home on 103.7 The Game. I got a reminder for you. I'll share the news first on UL basketball because it's fresher, then LSU football. But I do want to get back this segment to where we left off. I know Clint had a call toward the end of our last segment. So anybody that wants to go in on Kyler Murray, do you think he'll be a bust or not? It's your sink or swim question of the day. Call. We'll put you in the queue. We'll get right to you. 706-0111. All right, to the reminder, and it's funny that with Ken Trahan, we discussed Jeff Ireland on the football side of Gail Benson's franchises, and now David Griffin taking over as the VP of basketball operations on the Pell side. My weekly reboot podcast that posted this morning, it's all about that and how quality leadership is making all the difference. It has for the Saints, transforming the way that they do things with the draft, with free agency. And I think you're about to see the same happen with the Pels. Forget about all my talk 2-3 months ago about will they survive as a franchise in that city. I feel a lot better about that with David Griffin. And I'm serious. That one hire makes that much of a difference. So I'm not going full tilt on that right now. But you want to listen. It's about 11 minutes long. You can catch it later tonight, tomorrow morning, whenever you got a chance. The Weekly Reboot Podcast, 1037thegame.com, and the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand. All right, let's get to the news. And this just came out within the last hour or so. Tyrus Smith, 6'8", 250 pounds, is going to help bolster Bob Marlin and UL basketball's front court. He is a JUCO transfer, eligible to play right away, and my understanding is he's got 2 years left to roam. He's a Mississippi native, went to UTEP 2017-2018, last year at Jones County JUCO, where he played alongside our guy Galen Alexander, and now he's going to be taking his talents to UL. And according to Bob Marlin, they like him, and they feel that he gives them a pretty nice balance of inside scoring, rebounding, and he can shoot it out to the three-point arc as well. So the Cajuns next year add a JUCO big with 2 years of remaining eligibility. On the LSU side of things, Blaine Viator foretold this on our program, sitting in at Rufino's on the River Friday. He said LSU is about to land a big fish from the West Coast. They did. Jermaine Burton, four-star wide receiver, 6'1", 193, listed as the number six wideout in the country, and he becomes the second wide receiver to commit to LSU in the class of 2020. You got to love this. Both are top 50 overall players. The other one, significantly closer than California. In fact, well, he's not too far from me right now. Kayshawn Booty from Westgate. So a couple of top 50 overall prospects now in the boat for LSU at the receiver position. Burton gave his declaration early Saturday afternoon. So a couple of updates I wanted to make sure that you had there. How about some calls now? 706-0111. It occurred to me, Clint, as we go back to the sink or swim question, it occurred to me there's one guy that I didn't mention in my young quarterbacks that are playing right away. I went to Lamar Jackson. I went to Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes, various levels of success there, right? Some that were asked to play right away, others not quite as much. I didn't get to Baker Mayfield. I don't think that Kyler Murray will be the level of quarterback in the NFL that Baker Mayfield is. So as I continue giving you my litmus test, let's continue to stack all of these up. He'll be better than Tebow. I knew that was bus central. He'll be better than Johnny Football. He's got a better head on his shoulders. He's in a better space. I think he's got a chance, knock on wood for the young man, to not be as susceptible to injury as RG3. Those are some of the comparisons I've given. I don't think he's got a chance of sniffing Pat Mahomes' level. I mean, that was historic stuff we saw last year. Let's not kid ourselves. I'm not caught as a prisoner in the moment. That was just straight up legendary. And it's the only thing that kept Drew Brees from winning the MVP. So he won't be Mahomes' level good. I also don't think he'll be Deshaun Watson level good. I'm telling you now, I don't think he'll be Baker Mayfield level good. But he'll be better than Lamar Jackson. And Lamar's path to the field was interesting because he was able to split time and kind of be the change of pace guy behind the not elite Joe Flacco. And eventually, he took over for Flacco due to injury and never relinquished the job. Well, we saw what that did when the Ravens got into the playoffs and got into a tight spot last year. They had no chance in that first-round playoff game, not even a little bit. So it'll be intriguing to see just where he lands. I think he's probably still going one overall. Is it the Cardinals who have that pick now? Do they shop it? Time will tell. Does he slip out of the one spot? Maybe. But I don't think he gets much further than five if he gets to Tampa. And so there's an opportunity for him to go to a number of different places. I'm just telling you what I think as far as his pedigree and the type of player he'll be. Now, we've mentioned a number of times the kid coming out of Duke. And CD, I don't have everything in front of me. My apologies. Daniel Jones?
Yeah, that's correct.
There we go.
Yeah.
And I've seen where Gil Brandt is saying, if you rewind the tape 20 years ago for Peyton Manning, he looks exactly like Daniel Jones does now. Wow.
What?
That's a pretty strong statement. He thinks the guy's got that type of game, and I'm not going to question him. But I mentioned earlier David Gettleman, and this is the guy calling the shots for the New York Giants now. Gettleman was asked about the 17th overall pick, and I wonder if Jones makes it to that spot. But if he does, sure seems like the Giants are going to try and scoop him up. Gettleman was asked about the Packers model with Favre and then bringing along Aaron Rodgers, would they consider doing that, having Eli Manning, and knowing that the apple of their eye is Daniel Jones?
How about the Green Bay model? You know, Aaron Rodgers falling to him while they had Brett Favre. You know, that, you know, he sat for 2.5 years, I think, or 3 years. You know, that's what you'd like to do.
I love that accent. Makes you want to have a little bit of whiskey and possibly a cigar. So Dave Gettleman there, he'd love to have a guy that could sit, watch, and learn. Wouldn't we all? And I know there's not a transfer portal in the NFL, but in the era we live in, I don't think anybody likes to sit for too long. And while there may not be a transfer portal, agents certainly get a little trigger happy of that. There's no doubt. All right, almost done with hour number one. Let's finish it in style with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Bravo, DD Bro and LSU Gymnastics, second runners-up nationwide. And yours truly, of course, thick-headed. I thought they advanced to the final round of two when we spoke on Friday. There were still four left, and they finished second amongst that group. A historic performance kept them from winning it all. But that is rarefied air, and some of those young ladies got some really big air as well. But bravo to LSU Gymnastics. You've done yourselves very, very proud. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. Coming right back, bringing Andrew Lopez with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Grove Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And you already know. But a reminder, it's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And we got you today until 6:35. That's Astro launch, bringing you to 7:10 first pitch from the Juice Box. Astros against the Twins. And we'll talk about those Stros at 5:45 with Brian McTaggart when he joins the program. Prep Sports at 6 o'clock with James Buers. But right about now, I've been neglecting the NBA playoffs. We've had way too much on our plates. Let's rectify that. And get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline, live from the Big Easy. Our good friend Andrew Lopez, Pel's beat writer, and a fan of the NBA, but you can read his work, and you should, NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. How are you, Andrew?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. And enjoying what I think is called off time. I'm not sure what this is really like, but I think I'm enjoying it right now.
Well, I'm sorry that we're disrupting that flow for about 10 minutes, but our listeners demand it. I actually want to go NBA playoffs wide first. Why are we seeing just a lack of competitive nature in some of these series? Don't get me wrong, competitive juices are flowing, but if I'm not mistaken, Spurs, Nuggets, the only thing that's tied at two. Why do you think there's been such an imbalance in the first round?
I don't think the top four teams in each conference are just that much better. I mean, you kind of knew about the East. We kind of talked all year long about it being a four-team race. Indy kind of put themselves in it, but they lost some speed when they lost Oladipo, and then it really became a four-team race. It was Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, and then Boston. And Boston, maybe one you thought was the most vulnerable, but they ever want to go out and get the sweep first. I mean, they took care of business completely in convincing fashion against the Pacers. You thought maybe the Nets and the 76ers was going to be that series in the East, whereas, you know, the Spurs and Nuggets are that series in the West where it's kind of neck and neck. And after the Nets pulled off a game one, what the Sixers scored, I think 145 the next night, 130 after that, or something like that. And they've kind of taken control of that series. I just think the tops of the league of the conferences are just that much better. Portland and OKC kind of expected that one, I think, maybe be a little bit closer. But I mean, those have been some really close games that kind of get, you know, a little bit pushed out at the end. But I just think it comes down to just who the top four teams are, and the top four teams are just that good.
Andrew, the Bucks are 13-point favorites tonight at Detroit. If they win that, it'll be a sweep. My question to you is this. Is Milwaukee as prohibitive a favorite in your mind in the East as Golden State is in the West?
I don't think anybody is going to be that. I think they are the favorite. I think they're a heavy favorite. I just don't think they're on the Golden State level just yet. Things can still go wrong. Giannis can be taken out of the game with shooting, obviously, but he's going to hurt you in so many other ways. And they've surrounded him with so many shooters, even bringing Nico Mirotic up there midseason. I think it probably cost him like 4 second-round picks for the Pels. But, you know, Nico brings a different element up there. I still think it's going to be a tough series against Boston coming up. I don't think Golden State has that tough series on the horizon, outside of having to face Houston next round. But I think they would be favorites in that, and they're favorites in anything afterwards. So they're heavy. I just don't think they're as heavy as Golden State.
You mentioned earlier the Pacers. We continue our conversation with Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, and the Times-Picayune, and we'll get to the team he covers, the Pels, shortly. But on the subject of the Pacers, they're swept out by Boston. Are we now to believe that the Celtics are what we thought they were preseason, or is that just a way that the matchup fell in their favor?
I think it is. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you kind of saw Tatum kind of take off in the series. He had been kind of up and down throughout the year, which is expected of a 20-year-old when you think about it. But, you know, Tatum in this, I think, was he averaged like 19.5 point rebounds. He was shooting 50 from the field, 50-something from three. So I think it's them kind of rounding in the form. It helps having that matchup, but sometimes you need that matchup to kind of take the next step to get your whole team kind of back on the same page.
All right, we'll circle back around. We got to the home team, and I'm impressed with the hire of David Griffin. For the fans listening that want to know what's next, I know there's been a connection to a guy that used to work underneath Griffin in Cleveland. What would you tell them about the way that he populates his organization?
His idea right now is he's trying to build kind of what he's called in some private circles a dream team, if you will, of guys to help him run this team. He's going after Trent Redden, who's right now the assistant GM in Los Angeles. He's basically the number three in Los Angeles right now. They've had permission to interview him. He essentially would come here and be the number two guy. He would probably get the title of general manager just to kind of help get him over. He has some other guys that he has his eyes on around the league. He's going to build his team, and I think he's going to kind of build it around what the Pelicans already have. So it's basically just continuing to add to this staff. It's not a sense of, you know, he's going to clean house and do it. He's just adding to what he has to be bigger and badder, basically. And, you know, it's such a great hire because it kind of overall it signifies, you know, the Pelicans are all about winning. And now, you know, Gale wants them to win. Doesn't necessarily mean they're shooting for championships next season, but championships are the goal of this front office.
We have conversations on this show pretty regularly about which Pels stick around. I think it's obvious that Jrue Holiday is the focal point that you can build on. We've talked about a local product, a kid at least that played in Lafayette with Elfrid Payton. But I'm going to ask you about Jahlil Okafor. And the feature piece you wrote on him is outstanding and kind of what he had to go through to get to New Orleans. Getting to know him, do you think he wants to stay? And then do you think he will be allowed to?
I do think so, and I think that he'll at least be in the training camp because he's got a team option for only, you know, $1.7 million next year, $1.8 million. When they signed him last year, that was one of the shrewder moves that Dell made, finding somebody on bargain contract that you can keep around on the cheap. So they have him on the cheap next year, and when he started, I think he averaged 14-7. He's still going to give you 8-6, 8-5 in that territory, and I think for someone like that, yeah, you go ahead and keep him at $1.7 million. You know, he can be your backup guy. He does have some work to do on the defensive end. So I don't know if you'd have him as a starter unless you really had somebody like Anthony Davis to put next to him. But I do think he will be around next year, if only because his contract is going to be one of the better ones that you could find on a team that's going to be trying to pinch some pennies as they navigate some cap issues, not cap issues, but trying to figure out where they're going to go. They're going to use that cap space to kind of take on a guy next year for a pick. Are they going to use it to try to go get someone? So having somebody who can give you 15 to 20 minutes at just a 1.7, that's going to be a big thing.
Couple more questions for Andrew Lopez. We're talking Pels on 103.7 The Game. There was a prevailing thought that if it was going to be Danny Ferry, that Alvin Gentry probably didn't have much chance of surviving. Now that we know it's David Griffin, how would you rate those chances? And if they're to move in a different direction, what do you think the timing would be?
Gentry really got, I don't want to say lucky, but it was basically, I think, a situation where if one guy got hired, he was out. The other guy got hired, he was going to stay, plain and simple. Okay. And he gets to work with Griff in a sense of they know each other. They go back, and Griff almost hired him in Cleveland. You kind of got a sense that maybe Gilbert was the one who kind of wanted to go with David Blatt when they hired him in 2014. But, you know, Gilbert, they worked together in Phoenix. You know, Alvin watched him work his way up from a video intern to the front office to where he is now. They have a good relationship, and they've already started talking about players and filling this team out. The two of them, and I think this is where Gentry is going to be empowered a little bit more, he didn't have to look over his shoulder. Not that he has in the past, but they're going to be able to get into it with each other and then be like, all right, well, you want to go to dinner tonight? That's cool. And I think that's the important thing, whereas I don't think he had that before, where he could get into a fight, if you will, with management, and then everything be okay the next day. People got their feelings hurt. I don't think that's going to be the case this time. I don't think that's going to free Alvin up to kind of be a better coach next season.
I will finish up with Anthony Davis. And for those listening that all they got caught up in for a while was the theatrics, whatever was going on with Clutch Sports Management, Magic Johnson, the Pelicans. Maybe they're 2 months behind in their thinking. The idea that it's the Celtics, it's the Knicks. They're going to be the ones that can offer the best deals. Those are the two places where it's most likely to happen. Would you say that's still the case, or has this thing evolved in a different direction?
I still think, now obviously Griffin's going to try to keep him. He's going to do what he can to try and keep AD. I think it basically just went from a 0% chance to a 1% chance. Like it's still probably not going to happen, but they're all going to have discussions at least. Still, I do think Boston is probably the favorite to me. I just think they can offer the best package. New York is also going to have a chance, especially depending on where that pick falls. Everything's going to be decided on May 14th. And then you really get to see where things are going to shake out with the team and who's going to have the number one pick. Is it somebody that can deal it straight up for AD, go to Zion for AD? So there's a lot there to me. But, I mean, there's going to be wild card teams. You know, Toronto came out of nowhere to get Kawhi Leonard last year. So, I mean, maybe Brooklyn comes in the picture. Maybe because they'll have a lot of cap room. Maybe they get him and Kyrie. Obviously, New York's going to shoot for Kevin Durant. Maybe Denver, if San Antonio ends up beating them, they decide to say, you know what, hey, let's pair AD and Jokic together next year, and let's see if we can make a run. They may be able to take it without the commitment of him down the line. So there's going to be teams that try to make a splash, and I don't think this is just a Boston, L.A., New York type situation.
He is Andrew Lopez, and he's been talking shop on his day off. Andrew, my man, you know we appreciate that. Get back to nothing, or as much of it as you can accommodate.
No problem, man.
And if you're not following him, you need to be. NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. He used to be one of the best prep beat writers that I knew. Then he was one of the best LSU beat writers that I knew, and now he's one of the best NBA guys. That isn't an accident. The guy works his butt off, and he's super plugged in, especially on the hoop side. Our appreciation again to Andrew Lopez. As we head into our first break of hour number one, do not forget, we'll be back out this Friday, every Friday for the foreseeable future, to Ruffino's on the River. We had a huge crowd on Good Friday. I walked into the restaurant. They said, yeah, we'll see tonight. Good Friday is not always, you know, the most packed. It's not always the most reservations. The place was slammed on Friday night. It was a lot of fun. So to everybody who came out, we thank you. And we invite those who haven't been come join us this next time. I'll be there Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Ruff and Rodrigue in tow. It's B2BS Live at Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. All right, quick break, and we bounce back, and we take your phone calls. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station,
and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
I've got a funny feeling about something funny that's likely to go down in Baton Rouge tomorrow. I'll tell you about it now. Bumper to Bumper Sports back in on 103.7 The Game. We got time for your phone calls as well. After my prediction, call us up. Might be the last segment of the show where we can do that. We're pretty busy after this. 706-0111. We'll throw a little shade at 5:30. Brian McTaggart live from Minute Maid Park previewing Astros Twinkies at 5:45, and James Buehr's breaking down high school sports, namely the playoffs for softball and baseball. That's straight up 6 o'clock. And then, Clint, if you behave, under the dome at about 6:20. Okay, we'll definitely do that. Three players that Clint wants to see the Saints draft this week. So busy, busy times that are coming ahead of us here. But I've got that funny feeling, and here's what I'm driving at. I've attended press conferences on LSU's campus before that really become more pep rally than they are press conference. The one that really sticks out, and it's got a local flair to it, this just feels so funny, looking back and thinking about it, but LSU hired Pat Murphy as its softball coach. Allison Habits was coming in as well, both of them from Alabama. They were going to take over and take the baton from Yvette Girard and company. And Yvette was there that day. I was working, I believe, for Scout.com. I think I just left Tiger Rag Magazine. But at any rate, I was there. I covered it. Great interview from Yvette. Great interview from Pat Murphy. Posted the story. And then like 36 hours later, he was no longer the head coach at LSU. He was going back to Alabama. Like literally went through the introductory press conference. But here's the funny part about it. It turned into a bit of a pep rally, as I said. And Crowley, I mean like literally the city, pat yourself on the back because I think every one of you showed up there. There were posters. There was cheering. That was one of the first times I'd ever really witnessed that. I saw it a couple times after. Johnny Jones was hired for LSU basketball. And as my good friend Jeffrey Marks, Pulitzer Prize winner in Baton Rouge, said sitting next to me that day, it's like the Mount Rushmore of LSU sports showed up and came alive because you had so many former LSU players that showed up to see one of their own officially made LSU head coach. Johnny was passed over when Trent Johnson was named the head coach, I believe in 08. He did get the job, I believe in 2012 or thereabouts. What's a year or two between friends, but it was somewhere in that range. But you had people there that were clapping. What is my point? Tomorrow, Scott Woodward is going to be introduced as LSU's AD officially. It'll be a noon press conference in the journalism building, and here is the key phrase, the public is invited to attend. Such a thing also happened when Will Wade was brought on, and they did that one, I think, at the Union. But this is becoming an interesting trend, and it's really a fairly shrewd move on the part of universities, athletic departments. I get it. They're going to surround a bunch of reporters with fans, yahoos, and people basically just going nuts at the decision. They're thrilled. They're pumped up. And you know what? They should be. It's also pretty cool and interactive, right? And so on the experiential level, that's pretty darn cool. You get to say you were there when Scott Woodward was named AD and introduced. You get to say you were there when Will Wade was named head coach. Hey, those are moments that you remember. So it's kind of a shrewd move. But if you're a broadcaster or a journalist, it is hell. Because here you are in an environment where there's never supposed to be cheering, clapping, this, that, or the other. And that's really all that there is. So I've had my experiences with this before. And while it's a journalistic no-no, it's got to be a dream come true for fans. I completely and utterly get why they're doing it. It's just kind of funny to me, and it could be a funny environment tomorrow. All right, let's get out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Ken, what do you make of it all?
Oh, well, I'm glad they got the right person in charge, and I hope the first thing you do is find Nicky Vargas. I mean, the rest of the football, basketball, gymnastics, all that stuff is looking real good except for the women's basketball. So I hope you take a hard look at her and tell her, you know, send her out the door. I mean, they haven't done anything since she's been there.
I think both basketball coaches might have something coming to them. With Vargas, it'll be directly from the new AD. With Wade, it'll only depend at this point, I would think, on the NCAA. And I'm not sure how likely that is at this point. Time will tell, but I don't think the new AD coming in is a good thing for either of the two basketball coaches.
Yeah, and what happened to Oklahoma City, man? I mean, they just seems like they just fell off a cliff or something. It's unbelievable. It just not. I thought Paul George and Westbrook would, you know, put them to the Western Finals at least, and it's not looking like they're getting out the first round.
They were a very trendy pick to win that opening round series, and Russ hasn't been Russ, and I'm usually a pretty big Russ guy, so I don't think this is him normally. I don't think this is what he does come playoff time, but it's not his year, that's for sure. Ken, I appreciate the call, man.
All right, thank you.
Let's take another. Back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. All right, Tommy, what you got for me?
Hey, good afternoon, Ben. Speaking of food, I think I heard some food saved earlier today, but I didn't get the whole story except in relative to the women's gymnastic team having a billboard up congratulating them on being runner-up, and some guy whose name on this kind of dissed them for it. I was curious if you had the scoop on that.
Not only have I heard the scoop, but I carve out a segment of my show every day called Throwing Shade. You might hear something about it on the other side of this commercial break.
I've never been early for many things, but appreciate the heads up.
Tommy with the professional segue contributing to the show. You can't plant that kind of call. Trust me, I've tried. You hit your boys up and like, hey, call the show today. It never goes that way. Nor would I ever do that. That's a joke. Some people may. I don't. But we appreciate Tommy there. Yes. Darren Rovell of the Mothership, I think, did a little bit of open mouth, insert foot, and we'll cover that. Hopefully not ad nauseum, but I do promise you that we'll cover it on the other side of this break. I'll finish my train of thought because we've got about a minute left in the segment. It's just interesting. When you're in the shoes of a non-biased journalist, and yeah, that term is, you know, we're dwindling in number. I'll just say that. I got love for my people on the other side of the basin, but a lot of the stuff going on with Dick Vitale and company, I think that there was some fan flaming there, right? I think they knew that they would become cult heroes. Not saying they didn't believe that. Not saying that they don't believe in Will Wade. Obviously they do, but boy, there was some fan flaming, and I'm going to leave it at that. It's not appreciate, respect for all those guys, and they know that. But it was interesting. When you're in an environment like tomorrow, you're going to have journalists on the inside of that thing and then surrounded by a bunch of fans going nuts. It could be pretty hilarious. I wish I was able to see it tomorrow. And unfortunately, I'll be here in the Acadiana area. But then, fortunately, I'll be here in the Acadiana area. We're coming right back in and throwing shade. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Bad, bad decision by Darren Rovell. But I will say this about the guy. He's not exactly backing off of the original statement. I'll explain. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. And Tommy, you led a horse to water, so now we'll drink as we're back in on 103.7 The Game. Really, I don't need to waste any time. I can get right down to brass tacks. I'll issue your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. They can help you out. All kind of great inventory, standing seam metal awnings. They've got the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, but know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. The beautiful part about my friends at Patio Center is the innovation and the ability to sit down, create a vision with you, and then they're going to help you to fulfill it. You'll be able to trust their professional installers inside your home as well, and what a relief that is in 2019. Collectively, The team at Patio Center is ready to up your patio game this year before this football season. Not later, right now. Go to the website to start. It's patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
If you haven't seen it yet, I'll run through it with you, and then I'll give you my take. LSU Gymnastics, after finishing national runners-up over the weekend, put up a billboard in Baton Rouge. Lamar keeps getting that paper off of LSU Athletics. The billboard had a picture of the team with its national runner-up trophy, and it says in the left corner, 2019 NCAA Gymnastics National Runner-Up. Pretty classy gesture. And, frankly, LSU already buys the billboard space. They got to use it anyway. What else are they supposed to put there? Buy your women's basketball season tickets right now? Okay, there's the shade at Nikki Fargus. But Darren Rovell couldn't help himself. And he quote tweeted LSU Gymnastics with a picture of their billboard and said the following. No, you can't put up a billboard for coming in second. Reese Bobby at its finest right there. From Talladega Nights. Cody Warsham was one of the first to weigh in, throwing some shade himself. Imagine being the guy at the water cooler with this awful take. Many others have taken Darren Rovell of the Mothership to task. But the funniest, by far, have been the actual gymnasts themselves. They continue to call him by the wrong name, and it's outstanding. I mean, it really is. They basically say, hey, what did you accomplish today? They take some jabs at Darren Rovell. Who are you, basically? And then they keep calling him the wrong name. Some of them even dabbling into names that start with a D that are female names. I think I saw one of them call him Darla. That is hilarious. And so the LSU gym team, major props, not just for bringing home some serious hardware and achieving what really hasn't been done in the program's history, but also for taking a pretty big name, pretty recognizable name. He's not often on the mothership as far as the TV side, but he writes a lot about the business side, and they absolutely crushed his face. Now, the briefed postscript to the story. Darren Rovell went on with Jordy Collada, T-Bob Hebert this morning, off the bench, ESPN Baton Rouge, and you could say that he doubled down. That's the phrase that the Advocate used when repurposing that story and aggregating it. I'll say this, having listened to a clip of it, I don't know that he doubled down. He just didn't back down. So Darren Rovell saying, you can't put up a billboard for finishing second. And so again, we leave you with the immortal words of Reese Bobby. If you ain't first, you're last.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
For the record, I'm for the billboard. I don't think it was the wisest move by Darren Rovell. I also don't think he has to come on Baton Rouge Area Radio and back down. So I get why he wouldn't back down from that stance. It's just not my favorite stance. I'm not sure that is where you plant your flag, right? Not sure that, to use another analogy, is where you plant your foot in the ground and kind of, you know, go from there. We'll take your calls. We got a moment or two. 706-0111. Another topic that could have fit into that segment, but it's just not sports related. Clint, I know you've seen this because you don't ever leave the internet.
I do sometimes.
The Easter Bunny in Orlando that beat the crap out of some guy on the side of the road,
yes,
before the Orlando PD had to come and break up, like just a flat-out Donnybrook. That felt like watching something that Trey Parker and Matt Stone would have created. It felt like a real-life South Park episode. The Easter Bunny was wailing on that guy.
That was amazing. Like, I saw it during the break earlier in the show, and my God, that was about the most hilarious thing I've seen like in the last couple days. And that's saying something, considering I saw Shazam last night.
I don't even know what that is. What's Shazam?
Superhero movie, DC.
I'm a Marvel-only guy at this point. I will go see Avengers Endgame probably, yes, Sunday of this weekend. I don't often dip into the DC waters. I had to be convinced that Marvel is a good idea. Now, of course, I mainline it into my veins.
Don't get me wrong. Marvel's amazing, but I've started to get in more DC after watching Aquaman. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of into this.
Cut your mic off.
There we go.
Just for another 45 minutes or until the show's over. Go to that sweet rest, sir.
So I guess I'm under the dome's off the table?
Under the dome is on the table. We'll let you tell the people the three players that you would like to see the Saints draft. It's a good segue. Look at you and Tommy. You guys think I can't deliver a damn segue? Got you guys doing my job for me, putting it on a tee. Yeah. Clint's going to take you under the dome at about 6:20 p.m. Between now and then, two-thirds of the way to a full Tommy Mansky. We're going back-to-back interviews. Brian McTaggart on the other side of this upcoming break to talk Houston Astros baseball. Twins invade the juice box. First of a three-game set tonight. And James Buehrs will be with us at 6 o'clock. He had to remind me of this because we spoke off air. They changed the way that they are handling the softball semis and finals. You'll be interested to learn a little bit about that. And the quarters are no longer played over in Lake Chuck either, or Sulphur technically, excuse me. So we've got some more information that we could share with you, not just on the softball playoffs, which are getting to the end this week, but the baseball playoffs that are just starting this week. In fact, you got a number of area teams that are playing tonight. I would imagine some of them play ball here in about 19 minutes or so. It'll be a timely interview. Make sure you catch it, James Buehrs, at straight up 6 o'clock. So we've given you the details on what Tommy wanted to know about. Darren Rovell saying you can't post a billboard for finishing second to LSU Gymnastics, and then they basically called him Darla and put him in a body bag on Twitter, which is what everybody does to people on Twitter. Nobody ever shows love to anybody. People just crush people. That's what social media is by and large for. And speaking of crushing people, just trust me on this. If you haven't seen the guy in the Easter Bunny suit waylaying some guy on the sidewalk, you're going to want to see that. I've already said that it felt like watching a real-life South Park episode. It feels like something that could have been in a Jackass movie. It's a cross between being in a Jackass movie and a South Park episode. It's just incredibly hilarious. Maybe even Bad Santa, Clint. See, if your mic was on, I'd allow you to comment on that. Yeah. But your mic, I don't understand. How are words coming onto the microphone if it's off? We have our wires crossed. We're going to have to go into a break, and you'll be flogged a little bit. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're coming right back in and then taking a trip to Minute Maid Park on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, and all around the world on 103.7thegame.com.
This is Ed Ogeron, head coach at LSU Fighting Tigers.
Right back in and ready to talk some Major League Baseball, specifically your Houston Astros. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're dialed in on 103.7 The Game. Let's take you out to Minute Maid Park, and we're ready to open up a door. Aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, Brian McTaggart, beat writer, covering the Astros for MLB.com. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Look, everybody here is fine. I don't think anybody's jumping off the cliff because the Astros just lost 2 out of 3 against the hated Texas Rangers. They're still 13-8, but I think the big thing that everyone's thrilled about, they're coming off the road, and they're getting ready for a 7-game homestand. Just how important is it for these Astros to get back to the juice box?
Yeah, I mean, they've only played six home games so far, which isn't a lot. You know, they've won all six of them, and I tweeted this out earlier today. They've actually played as many games at Globalize Park in Arlington as they have at Minute Maid. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think they're definitely looking forward to getting home for a full week and trying to build some momentum and get some crowds behind them because, you know, they didn't always play well at home last year. You know, they were much better on the road. So, you know, so far, six games, you know, they swept the A's, swept the Yankees, and, you know, a chance to build some momentum here at home.
I mentioned 13-8, and yes, they lost yesterday, but it might have been their most exciting ball game of the year when you consider the mad dash coming back from 9 down. They lose 11-10, but give us a little bit of an anatomy of a comeback. How did they do it, and just how wild was it being there?
Yeah, it was a crazy game. Just the fact they were down 10-1, you know, I think their win probability at that time was probably like 0.1%. And they, you know, hit some home runs to get back in the game. And then, you know, they have a chance at the end. I mean, they got the bases loaded, Jose Altuve up, and he draws a walk. And, you know, then they end up getting a chance with Chirinos and just couldn't quite get there. I mean, you build yourself a 10-1 deficit. It's hard to come back. And they made a run. But, I mean, it's good to see their offense performing like this. I mean, they've really swung the bats well after that first week of the season when they were scuffling to score runs.
Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. And we're going to send you in a little bit over to Minute Maid as well. 7:10 p.m. the first pitch, 6:35 Astro launch. You can hear it right here on Acadiana Sports Station. It'll be Astros versus Twins. And before we dissect the pitching matchup, it's Brad Peacock versus Jake Odorizzi. Tell us about these Twinkies at 12-7. How much are you buying into their hot start?
Yeah, you know, they've played pretty well. I mean, they're, you know, one of the early surprise teams. I mean, they're a team I think a few people thought they could jump up and surprise some people. But, you know, coming off a sweep of the Orioles, you know, they're doing a little bit of everything pretty well under a new manager. So, you know, I do think at some point that, you know, they're, I don't think that we'll see them play it, you know, whatever they are, 12-7. I mean, I don't see them playing at that kind of pace. But, you know, and that AL Central is not the toughest division in the world. I mean, the Indians are the class of it, but, you know, they certainly have their warts as well. So who knows, maybe the Twins step up and make a run. I mean, they did make the playoffs a couple of years ago. You know, the team's changed a little bit since then, including their manager. But they've been a fun team to watch so far. And, you know, we're going to get a big dose of them here because the Astros go to Minnesota next week for four games. So, seven of their next 10 or 11 games against the Twins.
I already teased the pitching matchup, Odorizzi for the Twins. Let's go in on Brad Peacock for the home team. A pair of relief spots, Brian, prior to what he's got tonight, and that was due to what, a scheduled day off? So how does he make that transition? Obviously, he's done it before, but how does it work this time around?
Yeah, they had three days off in a span of about 11 games or 11 days, so they really didn't need that fifth starter. And Brad's a guy who's pitched in the bullpen before, done it very well. He started before and done it well. So, yeah, he's back into the rotation. You know, made two starts at the beginning of the year, but they need him to come out and deal. I mean, look what happened the last couple of days when Garrett Cole gives up 9 runs, 8 earned. Next day, Colin McHugh gives up 10 runs, 9 earned. You know, puts a little bit of work on the bullpen a little bit. So they can use Peacock to come out and pitch deep into this ball game, go 6 or 7 innings, and you know, hopefully for his case, the offense keeps swinging the bat. But Brad's a guy who's got stuff that can do that. I mean, we all know he's got. Pretty devastating breaking pitches. He's got this new changeup he's working on as well. So I'm anxious to see him back in the starting role and see what he can do.
And with the Twins coming to town, that means the return of Marwin Gonzalez. I mean, almost a lifetime glue guy, utility guy for the Houston Astros. Are they planning on doing anything to honor his return to Minute Maid?
Yeah, they're going to have a video tribute, I believe. And, yeah, it should be interesting to see. I mean, he was a very, very popular player here for good reason. I mean, he had probably the biggest home run in Astros. It is the biggest home run. I'll go ahead and say it. It is the biggest home run in Astros history. Game-tying home run in Game 2 of the 2017 World Series with two outs in the ninth inning off Kenley Jansen, tied that game. You know, he doesn't hit that home run. They go down 0-2 to the Dodgers. They probably don't win the World Series. That sort of changed the momentum of everything. And so, yeah, I think the fans are anxious to see him. I know that guys like Altuve and Springer and other guys in that clubhouse loved him. Played with him for so long. So, yeah, it's going to be fun seeing Marwin back. It's going to be weird seeing him in these red, white, and blue colors of the Twins. But they're going to, like I said before, they're going to get a good long chance to catch up with Marwin here over the next 10 days when they play the Twins 7 times.
Another moment or two with Brian McTaggart joining us, talking Houston Astros baseball on 103.7 The Game. I do want to shift to what feels like a trendy topic. I'm not sure how likely it is, so I guess I'll pose the question to you. Dallas Keuchel, still hanging out, right? Still a free agent. I believe that his agent said recently he might be willing to accept a one-year deal. Where does that leave the Astros? They could use his services. Can they afford him? Are they interested? Is there any fire to where there seems to possibly be smoke?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the deeper, obviously, we get into the season, this price is going to drop. And Astros are going to be one of those teams looking for starting pitching. Not that their starting rotation has been bad. I mean, before the bad starts by Cole in the queue, their starting rotation had an ERA of 3.07, which was third best in baseball. But you can't have too many pitchers, and when you think you do, go get another one. So, yeah, I mean, if we're sitting here a month from now and Keuchel's willing to come back at that point on a 10-year deal, if you're the Astros, you do it. I mean, I'm assuming Keuchel has kept himself in shape throwing-wise and, you know, has a pitching program going on. At some point, he's just going to want to play. And, you know, the price has probably dropped pretty significantly, and now that we're a month into the season, it's probably dropped even more, and it's dropping by the day. So at some point, things are going to merge to where the price is right for somebody. Keuchel's going to be ready to play, and he's going to put on a uniform. Where that's going to be, I'm not sure.
Crazy times. All right, we'll end with this, and it's kind of a connected thought. Anything else that you've seen through 21 games to the Astros as far as positions of need, places you think they could be active to either get better or to fortify some depth as we draw closer to the trade deadline?
Well, I think the biggest issue right now is their production at DH. And, you know, they do rotate position players through DH. And, you know, guys like Altuve, he'll DH, you know, one time a week. Springer does it. Brantley's going to do it a little bit more. But the two guys who were expected to get most at bats there, Tyler White and Tony Kemp, have not produced at all. Two guys that are out of options. So if the Astros send them to the minors, they're going to have to clear waivers. And then the Astros have a guy at AAA who's killing the ball, Jordan Alvarez, at 7 home runs so far, leads all the minor leagues. And, you know, you just got to think at some point, has that become too much for them, not, you know, tempted to bring Alvarez up and be the DH and cut ties with probably White at this point, you know, maybe Kemp down the road. Who knows? Neither one is swinging it very well. I think that's the biggest issue right now is what point are they going to pull the trigger on Alvarez? What did you do with Kemp and White? You know, I think as the trade deadline gets closer, they're probably going to look at some catching depth. Max Stassi has not given them a whole lot at the plate, although he did hit a home run the other day. But, you know, kind of like last year when they brought in Martin Maldonado, I think they could use another catcher at some point. But and maybe starting pitching. But I think right now they have to sort out this DH, Tyler White, Tony Kemp issue that's going on where you're not getting much production out of two guys on your roster who are out of options.
Brian McTaggart getting us ready for Astros and Twins. Yeah, they're going to play a bunch, but it starts tonight here within the next, hour and 15 minutes. Brian, you know we appreciate it. Enjoy the ball game.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Always good when you get game day scoop right from the ballpark. All right, I'm butting up against the end of hour number two. We got a busy third hour coming at you. Yeah, it's abbreviated, so we better hustle. James Buers, when we turn the page, we're talking high school softball, high school baseball. They're at different stages of their playoffs right now. A lot of local flavor there. Then Under the Dome with Clint, three players that he would like to see the Saints draft this week. And then we get you out to Minute Maid, or should I say back to Minute Maid. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're going to bounce right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to ride. It's hour three of three, and we are underway. You're listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, and for the next 30 minutes or so, joined by the famous Clint D inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, there's no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. We have been busy for 2 hours. LSU, UL, Astros, NBA playoffs, and it's time to take it to the prep level. We've got playoffs underway today for the baseball side, and we've got the semis and the finals for girls softball. To bring it all home for us, it's our man James Buers doing great work with the Acadiana Advocate. And James right now joining us on the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. James, happy belated Easter to you. How are you on a Monday?
I'm well, Ben. Happy Easter to you and yours.
All right, let's get right down to it. And we'll start with the ladies because we're gentlemen, but also because they're further along in their playoffs. I'd love for you to explain to our listeners how this year's playoff system, especially once they get towards Sulphur, is different than last year.
Yeah, so, you know, the previous years, the softball state tournament started in the quarterfinals, and it was a 3-day tournament. So essentially, once you got to the quarterfinals, you started playing in Sulphur at Frash Park, which is a huge complex. And there was about, I think I did the math the other day, it was 95 teams qualified for the state tournament in softball, which is a lot, you know, because that's obviously 12 brackets. And the reason it's not 96 is because the Division 5 has one less team. So 95 teams qualified for the state tournament, and this year it's the state tournament is just the semifinals and the finals, and it's a 2-day tournament. And the reason why this was changed is to avoid having the semifinals and the finals on the same day, meaning that every team that qualified for the finals had to play 2 games in 1 day, which is kind of ridiculous. I mean, you shouldn't have to play a championship game the same day you play a semifinal game. So because of that, logistically, they could not also have the quarterfinals as part of the state tournament anymore. So it's just a 2-day tournament. All the semifinal games will be played on Friday, and then all the finals games will be played on Saturday. So that's the change this year. And I think ultimately it's a good one. Obviously, I think some people still wanted the quarterfinals to be a part of the state tournament just because, you know, if you get that far, you want to be rewarded. But I think now you have to win more games to get to the state tournament, so it makes it a little bit more special if you get there. And obviously there's just not as many teams that make the state tournament in general now.
I'm sure these coaches love it, though. I mean, to your point earlier, you're not having to play the semis and the finals on the same day. I mean, even if it wasn't, you know, I guess, strictly speaking, a doubleheader, you were playing both of those games in the same day. So this would be nice, I would think, to get your stud pitcher, especially a little bit of rest. James, let's focus in on 6 local teams that are in the semifinals and getting ready to potentially play in the finals this Saturday. And we'll just go down the line. We got a litany. We're lucky. Beauchesne, Church Point, St. Thomas More, Notre Dame of Acadia Parish, LCA, and Northside Christian. I'm not going to spend a lot of time or ask you to a Northside Christian. I know they're defending Division 5 champs, but there's such a limited pool of teams that they basically advance right to where they are. So just for the sake of this conversation, indulge me. Let's take the other 5 into consideration. Which ones do you favor to take it all?
Well, I think you have to start with Notre Dame. They are still undefeated to this point, which is kind of remarkable. I can't speak with any certainty about if that's ever happened in softball in high school in Louisiana, but it would be an impressive feat if they could go the entire season without having lost a game. You know, the funny thing about it is they basically lost every starter from last year's Division III championship team except for one, which is their pitcher, Sydney Seymour. She also is their leadoff hitter. She's expected to go to LSU Unis to continue her softball career. And they also had to replace their head coach, Ashley Ray, after spending several years with the Notre Dame program. She left, and now Dale Cerie, who was previously a graduate assistant with the McGee State softball program, he's now the head coach. But somehow they just got better from last year. They had some underclassmen step up, including 2 freshmen who were already committed to LSU. They brought a lot of power to that lineup. So they're going to be really tough to beat in that division. I really can't see any team beating them. The other team that I would keep an eye on is certainly St. Thomas More. They have the experience that some of these other teams like the LCAs of the world. LCA had never won a playoff game before this year. Church Point hadn't been to the state tournament since 1994. Beauchesne is really young. But St. Thomas More has that experience. Now, St. Thomas More is also starting a lot of sophomores and has a lot of youth on the team. But just that pedigree, I think, makes a difference once you get to the state tournament. And also they have experience in the circle. Their best pitcher is a Spring Hill Spring Hill signee, Peyton DeSormo. That she's going to, you know, having her in the circle is going to make a huge difference for the Cougars. And I think they have enough pop in their lineup to score some runs. So I would keep an eye on the Cougars. They drew Archbishop Hannon in the semifinals, so we'll see what happens. But I think the Cougars have a good chance of getting to the finals. So I like Notre Dame and STM's chances.
Every time you think you know something about local high school sports, remember that he knows more. I tell myself that all the time. Just wanted to remind you. James Buers with the Acadiana Advocate. You want to read his stories, his coverage of high school sports online, I think you should. TheAdvocate.com/Acadiana. Click on sports. Go to preps. You'll see James' mug, and that's where you find the ink. All right, we started with softball. Let's get to the guys. And some of these teams are beginning play just about as we speak. The first round of the LHSA baseball playoffs underway. And again, kind of like softball, I'll let you give our listeners a tutorial, those that are just plugging into the season on the prep level. How is it different on the select side as far as the playoff format for the non-select side? In particular, when you talk non-select, 5A to 2A.
From 5A to 2A, the first round of the playoff is a single elimination game. And that's interesting is because that's where you see some of these upsets that you know, in the past, including Acadiana last year as the number three seed, they lost in the first round to a, you know, a much lower seed. I think last year, Acadiana lost to number 30, HL Bourgeois, and some of these powerhouse 5A programs, because it happened to Barb a couple of years ago as well. They've been pushing to get a three-game series in the first round so that, you know, they don't, their seasons don't end on a random upset, because, you know, baseball can be so unpredictable, but it is what it is right now. The first round of the non-select baseball playoffs from 5A to 2A is a single elimination game. Then if you win that game, you'll get to a best of three series in the second round and the quarterfinals. And then the state tournament goes back to single elimination in the semifinals and finals, obviously. So, that's what's different on the select side. Because there's less teams, the first round of the playoffs for them is a best of three series. And then the winner of that goes to the quarterfinals. So, that's where it's a little bit different. So a lot of these higher seeds on the 5A and 4A level are kind of wary of the teams they're playing, because as the Acadiana coach, first year coach Clay Coche told me yesterday, you know, everybody at that level seems to have one pitcher who can kind of dominate. So that seems to be what could give a higher seed some trouble. So, like I said, a lot of teams have to be wary of that and have to come ready to play, because your season could end after one game in the playoffs.
All right, I'll keep it really simple. As we wrap up with James Buehrs with the Acadiana Advocate, give me two teams, local area teams, going into the prep playoffs that intrigue you. Not saying they have the best chance to win it all, just teams that intrigue you.
I would start with Brobridge. They're the number three seed in Class 4A. You know, Brobridge, it seems like they've been knocking on the door for the last 3 years under their head coach. His name is slipping my mind off the top. Kyle Cormier. Under him, they've been to the semifinals three times, including in 2016 and 2017. And last year, as the number one seed, they got to the quarterfinals, but were upset by eventual champion Benton. It just seems like one of these years it's going to be their year, and they just won a basketball state championship. So you wonder if a little bit of that basketball magic can rub off on the baseball team. They've had a really good year. They're very deep on the mound, and they've got some experience in the lineup as well. Cole Mouton was an all-state pitcher for them last year, but he hasn't even been their best guy for some of the year. I think it's Caleb Sorosky has been their best arm. So I would definitely keep an eye on Brobridge. I think their road is favorable. They avoid Benton, which is the team I think they want to avoid, and they obviously avoid the number one seed, Tioga, as well. So I would keep an eye on Brobridge. And then, of course, you got to keep an eye on Sterling, three-time defending champion in Division II. It just seems like when they get in the playoffs, no matter what kind of regular season they had, they kind of carry this swagger with them into the playoffs. And to me, it seems like teams kind of crumble to the pressure of playing the Rebels, just because they know how to win at this level. They've got a terrific pitcher in Peyton Lejeune. He's kind of a do-everything for them. He's a great offensive player as well. And I think they have enough experience in other places to make another run. But they're not even the highest seed from their own district in that division. St. Thomas More is, and that team swept them in their two-game regular season district meeting. So I would keep an eye on the Cougars as well. But when you won three straight championships, it seems like you got to give Sterling the benefit of doubt ultimately.
Yeah, I'm with you. You turn your back on Mike Thibodeau and those Rebels at your own peril. And could this be the year of Pod Bro? You're right. Maybe a little magic rubbing off from the basketball side to the baseball side. He's James Buehrs. We've been talking softball, baseball. At some point, you need to get your tookus out and watch some spring football and report back on that. You're not busy enough, are you?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because today some news broke. Kurt Ware, the former Rain head coach, accepted the head coaching job at New Iberia Senior High, moving up to 5A. Kurt Hudson was previously the coach at NISH. He was there for 20 years, but he decided to retire from the public school system and take the head coaching job and the athletic director position at Highland Baptist. So that opened up a spot for Kurt Ware, who had recently stepped down at Rain, and so Kurt ultimately decided to take the NISH job. And it should be really interesting how Kurt's system, Wing T system, works at NISH. You know, obviously, Acadiana runs severe in that district. We'll see what happens with the Wing T system in 3-5A.
How about that? I hadn't caught that, so you made sure it didn't get past the goalie on this show. James, you know we appreciate you. We're going to be following your coverage. Thanks for everything you do for local sports, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ben.
I try not to miss a lot, but God help me. He got me there. I really hadn't seen that one today. Been hitting the roads a good bit, and there you have it. Little switcheroo. You'll recall maybe about a month, 5, 6 weeks ago, whatever it was, we had Kane Gidger in the program. He came out and joined me at the Tap Room River Ranch. About half the city of Rain came with him. It was really cool. Kane, of course, taking over the Rain Wolves program, the guy that used to have that job. And for quite some time, it appears Kurt Ware is filling the shoes of Rick Hudson for the Yellow Jackets of Nish. Very, very interesting. Also, great opportunity for me to plug the fact that tomorrow we're going to have on one of New Iberia's finest, Verge Osbury, right at the gate at 4:05. Never miss an opportunity for that kind of segue. And as we head into another break, one other reminder for you. Thursday, we'll be out at the Tap Room River Ranch. Highly encourage you come and check us out. And it's really the perfect time of year for you to do that. We're on from 4 until, I believe, 6:30 this week, if I'm not mistaken. Could be 7, but we're on at 4. You need to come and join us. And what I know is this. After we're done, the live music kickstarts 8 until 11. Somewhere in between, Rhythms on the River goes down. It's the perfect way to start your weekend just a little early. And if the weather continues to be like it is right now, well then, yeah, you got no reason not to come and join us. Again, this Thursday, B2BS Live at the Tap Room River Ranch, 201 Settlers Trace Boulevard. All right, we're taking a break, then we're coming right back in. Here's the game plan. We bring you Under the Dome. Three players Clint would like to see the Saints draft later this week. Oh my. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Back at it, and not a moment too soon. Ben and Clint, taking you home on this Monday. You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And yes, we shall draw closer to Astros v. Twins. First of three times, I believe, this week. Four times on the road next week. Yeah, they're going to get very, very familiar. Our thanks again to Brian McTaggart. Join us at the end of hour number two. To begin hour number three, you just heard from James Buehr. So we've been all over the place, and now we're going to go kind of back to where we started, if you will. And we had Ken Trahan aboard in the 4 o'clock hour. He gave his thoughts on what the Saints are likely to do, the positions they potentially may chase, and just how possible it is that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland and company trade back up into any place, really, the first round, just somewhere other than one second round pick and late in the second round at that. So, yeah, we've been around the world and back when it comes to sports. But we do want to bring it back and center it on the Saints. This is a huge week for the franchise. Are they all in? This week will give us an indication. Are they ready to make a Marcus Davenport-type move? Again, that's what we're all speculating on at this point. You've heard from Ken Trahan, and you've heard from yours truly. I'm going to let my friend share in the glory a little bit. It's time for me to turn the microphone on him, and it's time to take you under the dome.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
On Saturday's show, I kind of dove into a lot more about the NFL draft, the first round. I gave you my mock draft. I mentioned that I didn't think the Saints were going to wind up trading up because I'm just not a fan of diving hypotheticals. So with that in mind, this Under the Dome is going to be three players that I think the Saints should get. And I'm talking about in the second round with that 60-something pick. That's the range that I think they're going to wind up going towards here, because I feel like that's the smart way to go about it if you don't wind up trading up, because then you probably have to wind up giving away something big in the not-too-distant future. That's the biggest thing for me when it comes to New Orleans Saints and the NFL draft in 2019. And there's three needs I think the Saints need to focus in on. The offensive line, namely center. I'm definitely in lockstep with our guy Ken Trahan. He was on with Ben earlier. And then you got defensive tackle. I think you need one of those as well in there to help with some depth in case you have an injury to one of your star players. Because I felt like if you had that happen, that winds up hurting your chances of winning ball games. We've seen that in the past with this team. Injuries have plagued them, especially towards the tail end of the season. Thankfully, they're not in the Greenbrier anymore. They affect them a lot more back then. But then also, I think the final part of that puzzle has to be secondary. And with that in mind, here's three guys I think that Saints could get with that late second round pick. And starting things off, looking towards North Carolina State, I think Garrett Bradbury out of NC State should be the guy you wind up getting. A lot of people are grading him out quite well as being a second-round prospect. He's definitely a guy that you need to wind up kind of snatching up. And heck, if you can trade up for him in that round, I think that'd be huge for him. Dude, 6'3", 306 pounds, and can move around 4.9240. I understand the intangibles don't tell you a whole lot, but the guy has all kinds of potential to be a guy, to be somebody you need to keep an eye on in that second round. If he's there, you snatch him up. And then I got to say, another one that can wind up being an instant starter is out of Notre Dame by way of Shreveport, Louisiana, Jerry Tillery. That guy is a monster. 6'6", 295. He definitely has all the potential in the world. And again, you know, he's coming from a pedigree university like Notre Dame. I think that's definitely going to be huge for him. And he's also out of Evangel. This man is going to be a monster with this program in the not-too-distant future. I think he's definitely going to be a big deal. He stepped his game up since arriving there. I think if you can snatch him up in the second round, you need to. And the last one, this is going to be more of a preference here. I definitely think he has a chance to be a starter, but I think this is also going to be a lot of added depth. And this guy out of Temple, Rock Ya Sin, his actual real name I couldn't even pronounce, but thankfully I used to go by a surname, so it's a little bit easier for me to break that down. Rock Ya Sin, this guy, I think, is probably going to wind up being a third-round pick. Because it just feels like he wound up falling somewhere in that third round. And I'd say trade up there, get this guy, and that winds up adding a lot of depth to your secondary. And that's exactly what the Saints need in the future. So too long didn't read version of this. I got to go Garrett Bradbury out of NC State. Your boy, Jerry Tillery out of Shreveport, who played for Notre Dame. And then also Rock Ya Sin from Temple. Those are my three picks of guys that the Saints need to focus in on.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all. I'm going to wait a little bit. I've got that luxury, CD. I'm the host, so I cheat like that sometimes. I'm going to wait until Wednesday, and then especially on our Thursday show live from the Taproom River Ranch. I'll wait a little later in the week to divulge the specific players that really I've been eyeing. But I like the place that you've kind of given us so far. I like that as a jumping off point. So a big show on a Monday, and look, any other day, we might go till 7 o'clock, or LSU baseball might kick us out at 6:30. God bless the Houston Astros and their time clock. We got to get out of here at, yes, 6:35 today. That means we get to come right back in and compete for the world's shortest radio segment. We enter into it, I'd say, about 8 or 9 times, CD, something like that. Okay, maybe like 28 or 29 times every single spring that bleeds into summer. And we'll get to do that again on the other side. When we do come back, I'll remind you of our weekly schedule. We're going to be very, very busy taking you home this week, not just with our shows on the road, but with some of the guests that I've been lining up. And the conversations I've had today alone, very promising. I know, we've got a tough act to follow. Last week, we brought you Tim Brando, Ryan Terrio, Wally Poniff Sr. We had a really good time. We even went in on the Raging Cajun side of things, Phil Devey. We had some fun last week. To be certain, we plan to outdo ourselves this week, if humanly possible. So a reminder of our weekly set on the other side of this break, and then it will be Astros and Twins. Brad Peacock, Jake Odorizzi. Strohs have lost 2 in a row, but they're still 13-8. And as Brian McTaggart told you, they haven't yet lost at Minute Maid Park. So a streak they'll certainly be looking to continue. All right, we're coming right back in to put a bow on the show. This is B2BS. That's short for Bumper to Bumper Sports. Long on Sports Talk all day long on 103.7 The Game. That's the right music. It's the one that means it's almost beer 30. Okay, seriously, it's just after 6:30, and one more time, we're back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. All right, CD,
You've queued me up. Let me remind everybody in listener land what we have coming this week. Tomorrow should be a special show. We're right out of the gate, 4:05 with the Barry's Finest. Virge Ausberry, yeah, Deputy Director of Athletics at LSU, and a guy who knows Scott Woodward very well. So the incoming AD, he'll be minted tomorrow, if you will, an introductory press conference at noon. And so we'll have to get the take from a guy, again, who knows him, who's jogged with him. Pretty cool story in The Advocate about that. And certainly has rubbed shoulders professionally, maybe even politically, with this guy. Excited to have Virge Ausberry tomorrow. Make sure you're dialed in right at 4. We'll also get a visit from Jeff Duncan. NOLA.com, Times, Picayune. We're serious this week. All kinds of serious when it comes to Saints draft prep. And then Shea Dixon, after a one-week hiatus. Yeah, I know. We were at the Pontiff Classic last Tuesday. We're going to flip the script tomorrow. That, I can promise you. Working on Lynn Rollins to talk LSU baseball, LSU football, Scott Woodward on Wednesday. And then the show goes on the road Thursday and Friday. We'll be at the Taproom River Ranch Thursday. Hunt Palmer, Jeff Horchek, maybe another surprise or two up our sleeves. Friday, we're going to be at a Rufino's on the River. Ruffin should be in tow for that one. And a pretty special guest in the works for that program. Yeah, we're going to kick some butt this week, and we can only do it with you. Got to thank our guest today. It's a list that includes Ken Trahan, Brian McTaggart, James Buers. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's only just begun. Stros, Twins, they're coming up next. Jake Odorizzi against Brad Peacock. Astros looking to run the record to 14-8. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. We'll see you tomorrow at 4. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.